Let's open our Bibles to Romans 4, verse 1. We finished up chapter 3 last night. Didn't tape it. We might repeat it sometime. We got into chapter 4 a little bit. And then something was kind of interestingly discovered. Romans 4, 1. What then shall we say that Abraham, our forefather, according to the flesh, has found? Well, I turned that around already. In fact, if you look at the marginal note, it will actually suggest our forefather has found according to the flesh. It's not our forefather according to the flesh, but our forefather has found according to the flesh. In other words, that little prepositional phrase, according to the flesh, that has to do with what he's found, not with who he is. Okay? Now, this operates on an interesting premise. This operates on a premise that the recipients of this letter know who Abraham is. But it's written to Romans.
They're Jewish Romans.
Are they? Well, he's saying our. So that's very interesting. And yet, he's talking about, for example, chapter 1, verse 13, in order that I might obtain some fruit among you also, even as among the rest of the Gentiles.
What about God said he was going to bless the whole world through Abraham's descendants?
Right.
Not just the Jews.
Okay. That's got to do with whether he's addressing Romans, Gentiles, or Jews in the letter.
Forefather. So Abraham's all of our forefathers in that sense.
That's true, but that's not the point here. I think he's talking about our forefather as a Jewish forefather. Now, that's just my opinion, of course. He does, however, establish the fact later that the ones who are of faith are the descendants of Abraham from a spiritual standpoint. He talks about that in Galatians as well. But what I want to do is we're going to go back to the Old Testament and we're going to find out who Abraham is. Since Bob said, who's Abraham?
<Uh-oh>.
and I was operating on a premise myself that, well, everybody knows who Abraham is.
I have a good movie yet.
I had Abraham and Moses mixed up.
And that's true, too.
I thought Abraham and Moses were one and the same.
Oh, I got a movie on Abraham. That's not too bad.
The movie's not too bad?
Yeah.
So let's go back to Genesis. Chapter 10. Let's look just above it at chapter 9, verse 28. And Noah lived 350 years after the flood. So all the days of Noah were 950 years, and he died. Now these are the records of the generations of Shem, Ham, and Japheth, the sons of Noah. And sons were born to them after the flood. And we have a list of the sons of Japheth in verses 2 through 5. And where they went, where they settled. And it's interesting, in verse 5 it says, from these the coastlands of the nations were separated into their lands, everyone according to his language, according to their families, into their nations. So you have lands, language, families, nations starting to be developed. In verse 6 you have the sons of Ham. And that goes through verse 20.
What question?
Uh-huh.
How do we explain the Noah and the 350 years he lived?
He lived that long. How do we explain it? Because the effects of the sun's radiations were not felt as intensely prior to the flood and immediately after the flood as it is now. Because the total environment was changed at the flood. Prior to the flood, there was not direct radiation of the sun on the earth.
You feel the radiation after the flood, but it doesn't take effect on degrading humans until...
Right. That's what I said.
Not the same words, but... but essentially you said but it's really the effects of it are felt right after it. I mean, sorry, the radiation felt right after it, but you don't feel the effects.
Right, right. The radiation was still there to the same degree as it is now, for example. But the effects were not felt for quite a while. And that's why Noah lived for so long, and a lot of these other people lived for so long. Adam lived 900 and some years. Other people lived a long, long time.
There used to be like a big, there used to be a lot more water in the upper atmosphere.
Kind of formed a covering or a canopy that blocked that radiation.
It was see-through, but not as much light and stuff could come through. It kept things more nice and temperate all around the Earth, and you didn't have these big temperature fluctuations. There's like a whole book on it that's really good.
And then at the flood, that was removed. Basically, God poked a hole in it, and all the water came out and fell on the Earth. And then it was gone, and he didn't replace it.
I think volcanoes. God made a bunch of volcanoes start up and...
Oh, you think
that? Into their
there's no indication that volcanoes were involved at the flood.
But it said he broke up the foundations of the deep, so that had to be some cataclysm.
No, he opened the foundations of the deep.
Right.
Well, that means the waters from that were underneath were brought to the surface.
Right, but you can't get the waters coming to the surface without a huge geological changes. And if you have huge geological changes, then you'll have volcanoes with them as well.
Well, possible, but I mean, that's speculation.
No, that's what I'm saying. I think that's what I think.
Oh, okay. Do we care, Bob?
Thanks a lot. It's so cool. I read the book and I'm excited.
I know.
All that's kind of hard to swallow. But I just, you know, I'd like to get more information on how that happens, you know, but just all of a sudden, the lifespan of humans are dropped down to one-third of what it used to be, or less than that.
The question again, all of a sudden what?
The lifespan of a human is like 80 years now.
Oh, no, not all of a sudden, gradually.
Yeah, you can actually see it taper off.
Trace all the ages of these people. Oh, okay. It gets slower and lower and lower.
There's a table in this book somewhere about how long everybody lived, actually, and it's very easy to see on that. Man, you look at the flood, and that's where it starts going off. But isn't there a table in this book somewhere?
I don't know. Whether there's one that actually shows that you're talking about. But one can make that himself. Probably page 10 is what you're thinking of. That does a little bit.
Yeah, this is it.
So for 350 years, a person was active?
Yeah.
They did spend 250.
That was after the flood. He lived 950 years.
Yeah, this is if you look at the thing on page 10.
He doesn't have that.
Oh, you don't have it?
No.
Oh. If you look at this is the flood here. All these people are living 800-900 years, some 500, but most people are living a long time. And then after the flood, they start tapering off, you know, 600, 400, 500, 200, and then down to the 100s. And this is you know, after the flood. So the radiation started to cause greater genetic mutation and greater problems for health for us. And right after the flood, you can really see it in the ages of people in the Bible. It's amazing.
Wow.
Okay, back to Genesis 10, if I may. verse 10. And the beginning of his kingdom was Babel. That's talking about Nimrod. Verse 8. Now Cush became the father of Nimrod. He was a mighty hunter on the earth. He was a mighty hunter. Against the Lord instead of before. You might want to write against the Lord there instead of before. He was a rebel. Therefore it is said, like Nimrod, a mighty hunter against the Lord. And the beginning of his kingdom was Babel, which we'll talk about in a moment. Then you move over to verse 21. We have the sons of Shem. And that goes through verse 31. But at verse 24, verse 25 rather, and two sons were born to Eber. Okay, we're at 10:25. Two sons were born to Eber. The name of the one was Peleg, for in his days the earth was divided, and his brother's name was Joktan.
What does that mean, the earth was divided?
I was just about ready to explain it when he asked the question, but... Okay. The reason he's called Peleg is the word for divide is palag, and so they just kind of made a noun out of it and divided. The division of the earth is explained by several things. You start back to verse 5. From these the coastlands, the nations were separated into their lands, everyone according to his language, according to their families, and into their nations. Chapter 11. Now the whole earth used the same language and the same words. This is the way it was after the flood. You have Noah, his three sons, and their women. Okay? And then they had a whole bunch of children. You only have specific names mentioned in chapter 10. You don't have all the children mentioned, and you don't have any of the women mentioned. Verse 2, and it came about as they journeyed east that they found a plain in the land of Shinar and settled there. The person who's leading them is Nimrod. This is about 100 years, approximately 100 years after the flood. Okay, Nimrod has taken over a leadership position over many of the people. You have two lines of philosophy developing here. You have Noah and Shem, who represent the messianic promise, the promise of God providing a savior. You have the other people who are wandering off into other philosophical areas. And although they're all together in one area, they have this difference, and Nimrod takes the upper hand here and starts to present his philosophy that they can get close to that the gods, that there are gods and not one God, and that you can get closer to the gods to worship them by getting closer into the heavens. Okay? So a lot of the astrological things were developed first by Nimrod. That's why it said the beginning of his kingdom was Babel and Babylon. Now, verse 3. And they said to one another, come, let us make bricks and burn them thoroughly. And they used brick for stone and they used tar for mortar. And they said, come, let us build for ourselves a city and a tower whose top will reach into the heavens. Very important to make that translation change, the heavens. As literal from the Hebrew. Reach into the heavens. They're not trying to get into heaven. They're trying to get into the sky, into the heavens. And it is plural in Hebrew. And it does have the definite article. And notice it says, we'll reach into the heavens. By the way, the heavens, it's the very same word in Genesis 1:1, where it says, in the beginning God created the earth and the heavens. And still at 11:4, and let us make for ourselves a name, lest we be scattered abroad over the face of the whole earth. Nimrod's power here, his lust is for power to control over all the people, and he wants to meld them together through religion. Verse 5, the Lord came down to see the city and the tower which the sons of man had built. And the Lord said, behold, they are one people, and they all have the same language. And this is what they begin to do, and now nothing which they purpose to do will be withheld from them is a better translation. Look at the marginal note there if you have the right Bible. Other than that, you just have to say withheld, not impossible. It says withheld from them. Big difference. Come on, let us go down and there confuse their language, that they may not understand one another's speech. Now, if everybody's trying to build this religious tower, and that's what it was, by the way, a religious tower up into the heavens so they can focus more on their gods.
Is that what those towers that are in the Middle East, all over the place, is that what those are for?
The ancient Ugarits, yeah. That's what they're for. This was just a bigger one, that's all. They continue to build them afterwards, it's not as big. The reason is because the philosophy that is represented here did not go away, which I'll talk about in a moment. Verse 7. Let's go down and there confuse their language that they may not understand one another's speech. So the Lord scattered them abroad from there over the face of the whole earth, and they stopped building the city. So imagine all these guys building this city and this tower, and all of a sudden, all the different family groups have different languages.
All of a sudden.
Exactly. Boom. Just you guys have different languages.
An act of God.
So that the language, a lot of people think the human language is developed by humans. God is the one who created human language. And he created the differences at this time. Since then, they, of course, have developed and merged and changed and evolved, for lack of a better term. But God is the one who created this confusion by making these different languages and basically just filling their soul, filling their mind with this language syntax, language structure. But the point is, they couldn't understand each other anymore. So as they're building the city, imagine someone saying, "Hey, pass me that hammer." And the guy looks at him, "What?" And he doesn't understand what, so they're not understanding each other. You can imagine that multiplying that hundreds of times, the building just stops. There's no longer any communication. So the families separate one from the other and say, "Boy, what's going on?" And eventually they start moving away from each other because there's no understanding. And as they move away from each other, they move further and further away. So, this was what God accomplished. He scattered them abroad from there over the face of the whole earth, and they stopped building the city. Now, go back to chapter 10, verse 5. From these, the coastlands of the nations were separated into their lands, everyone according to his language, according to their families, into their nations. You see, this is what happened. And so the three sons, Shem, Ham, and Japheth, and their sons, all went their separate ways. But many of them stayed in Shinar. Not everyone left. Shem stayed in Shinar. Everybody else left. It's very possible that God actually pushed them out and let Shem's family remain in Shinar. Shinar was a very beautiful place. Okay, now all this happened about 100 years after the flood. Verse 9, therefore the name was called Babel, because there the Lord confused the language of the whole earth, and from there the Lord scattered them abroad over the face of the whole earth.
Question, Ross.
Yes.
Is this also the time that the different genetic makeup?
I was going to mention that. I forgot. Yes, I believe that when God changed the languages, he also changed the genetic appearance. In other words, created the races at this time. The races did not evolve. If they did not evolve, how did it happen? Okay. There's no statement in Scripture anywhere how the races originated. Just all of them, we got them, okay? Other than this language in chapter 10, where it says, from this son came this group, and from this son came that group, and from this son came that group. And we know that these groups are different. We have the Asians, and we have the Negroes, and we have the Caucasian, and we have these various differences simply being stated as having occurred. It's not something one can be dogmatic at, but there's no other place to put this creation of the races other than right here. And I believe that's what happened. So not only can I not understand you when you're asking for the hammer, all of a sudden you look a lot different than you did 5 minutes ago.
Why?
God did this. God did this to dissolve the unity that was developing. What was developing here was a one-world government situation where one man or one group had control over all the people. If that happens, then freedom is removed. And that undermines the spread of the gospel. If this one religious organization and person could control all the people, what's it going to do? It's going to stamp out the gospel. So the gospel needs to be preserved. One world government is enslavement. Okay, and so this was a prevention of that. Also a prevention of the Babylonian religion, which was starting to dominate everybody's lives.
I think it probably makes the most sense. I was thinking that since in Adam and Eve there had to exist everything that was, you know, that we have now, unless God did do something like that, that it's possible that just the way that their offspring made it, that eventually caused differences that were possible in the genetic code that they made. But I think that explanation where you said, would they do it with the languages, is probably better.
Well, I think it is, and I think that what you just suggested is far-fetched. Because the distinctions are so clearly obvious, okay, you know, that how is that all of a sudden going to develop and consistently? Now we have now we have a watering down of the gene pool with all these races being intermingled and so forth, which is no problem. I have nothing against that. But we see where the changes occur when a black and Asian mate, or white and Asian mate, or white and black mate, you know. Although the change with white and black, well, yeah, it's, you know, it's even there. You see it. And in all the other areas as well. And then we get into genetics, you know, dominant genes and all that kind of stuff. But that's not really relevant. Okay. Verse 10.
Maybe that according to their families is talking about that, where they were separated like that in verse 10.
Yeah, I see. When he changed languages, you have families. There weren't changes within the family. So here's this one family unit with two dozen kids, and this family unit with two dozen kids. They're now all, one of them's black and one of them's yellow, with the corresponding features. Not only do they not understand each other, but they also look entirely different. So there's a natural separation that's going to occur. All right, verse...
So those changes in appearance just happen like that?
Yes, that's the way I believe it. Okay. I don't see any other reasonable explanation for it.
It didn't happen with their children, and slowly went, this happened like that.
Right, just happened just like that, exactly. Verse 10, these are the records of the generations of Shem. Focus is on Shem now, because from Shem comes the messianic line. Okay, comes the promise of Messiah passed on him. Shem's family line also preserved the belief in Messiah. Shem was 100 years old and became the father of Arphaxad 2 years after the flood. We have very interesting chronological data here, okay? So this is 2 years after the flood when this guy was born. And we can actually put some dates here. I'm not going to confuse you with the dates. You, Daryl, probably have some of the dates already written down there. No? Okay. Maybe you haven't been through this. Well, let's not worry about the dates at this time. Verse 11, Shem lived 500 years after he became the father of Arphaxad. So he lived quite a while. Now the flood occurred 100 years after the Babel occurred 100 years after the flood. Now, let's look at verse 12. Arphaxad lived 35 years, became the father of Shelah. And Arphaxad lived 403 years after he became the father of Shelah. And he had other sons and daughters. And Shelah lived 30 years. Now notice the chronology. Arphaxad lived 35 years, had a son, right? That particular son lived 30 years and had a son. So we can actually measure it, 35 plus 30.
Plus 2.
Plus the 2. Well, actually, that 2 years after the flood is after the beginning of the flood, by the way.
Oh, okay.
Okay, so you might want to make a note. That's after the beginning of the flood, not the end of it. My point is that we have a chronology being built here. And it doesn't really matter how many years after this guy had a son he lived. Like Shem. Shem lived 500 years after. That's no issue. The point is he lived, he had a son when he was 100 years old, he had a son. That son had a son when he was 35 years old. So we add 35 to 100, right? And we have 135 years. Okay, so anyway, we trace that all the way down. I don't want to spend a lot of details on it, so let's just look through it. Verse 14, Shelah lived 30 years, became the father of Eber. Look at verse 16, Eber lived 34 years, became the father of Peleg.
Hey, that sounds familiar.
Yeah, Peleg is the time that the earth was divided. Okay, Peleg was born after the earth, after Babel. He was born probably 1 year after Babel. When you trace, I don't want to make this too complicated, but I'm going to write some things here. We start when Adam was created, and that would be year one of mankind, right? That's obvious. Adam was created, that's year one. We call it A-N-O-H-O-M-I-N-U-S, Anno Hominus, year of man, that's Latin. So the year that Adam was created is year one. Okay, trace it on down through 1656 A.H. In the year 1656, after the creation of Adam, is when the flood occurred. And there's a precise chronology that we can follow. Now, we get down here to verse 18 of chapter 11. Peleg lived, I'm sorry, verse 16. Eber became the father of Peleg. Well, when you add up all these numbers, the 100, 35, the 30, right on down, okay, you come to 1757 AH, which is 101 years after the flood. So if you want to make a note at verse 16, you can put 1757 AH. Okay. Say what? Anno Hominus. No, Anno Hominus, in the year of man. So, AH is in the year of man. So, what is the measurement of years here? Is it BC? Is it AD? No, it's AH, in the year of man. 1757 years after Adam was created. Okay? So, how many years had man been on the earth when Peleg was born? 1757 years. You got me? Okay. Now that the chronology is very precise, you can just trace it right on through, and I don't want to, you know, bog you down with that at this time. Notice verse 18: Peleg lived 30 years, became the father of Reu. Verse 20: Reu lived 32 years, became the father of Serug. Verse 22, Sarah lived 30 years, became the father of Nahor. You see, this is a precise chronology, isn't it? It doesn't matter whether somebody was born before Nahor or not. For example, let's look at verse 22. Sarah lived 30 years, became the father of Nahor. It doesn't matter if he had a son when he was 20 years old, does it? Because we're following a chronology here. The issue is that he lived 30 years and had a son named Nahor. It doesn't matter whether he had 10 sons before that. And he could very well have, but we're tracing a chronology, and therefore it's very precise. He lived so many years, had a son. That son lived so many years, had a son. You see? Precise. Precise measurement. Okay. Verse 24. Nahor lived 29 years and became the father of Terah. And Nahor lived 119 years after he became the father of Terah, and he had other sons and daughters. Verse 26, and Terah lived 70 years and became the father of Abram, Nahor, and Haran. Abram is our culprit. He later becomes Abraham, but he was born with the name Abram. Okay. Abram was actually the younger of those three mentioned. He's mentioned first because of his prominence in history. But he's actually the younger, and this can be established by tracing the chronology. Let me give you a date when Abraham was born. He was born in 1948 AH. That's my birth date, 1948. Now, we go back to Shem in verse 10. Shem was 100 years old and became the father of Arpachshad 2 years after the flood. Now that's a key. And when we study something, I don't need to give you now, but there's some details. 2 years after the flood is two years after the beginning. The flood began in 1656. It goes through 1656, goes through 1657. and the second year after the flood would be 1658. So 1658 is the time factor for verse 10. 2 years after the flood is 1658. Shem lived 500 years after he became the father of Arpachshad. So let's add 500 years to 1658. And you come up with 2158, okay? 2158 is when Shem died. Now, Shem is the one who received the commission from Noah to pass on the messianic promise, right? When was Abram born? 1948. Shem was still alive. Shem lived 140. About 150 years.
You mean how far past?
How long was Shem alive?
About 210
years. Yeah, about 210 years. Okay. Wait a minute, I have 150 years after Abe is born.
Maybe the 1940.
Oh, I know what I did wrong. I gave some wrong information. Okay. Back to verse 26. Some of this might be confusing, so I don't want to spend too much time on it. Verse 26, Terah lived 70 years, became the father of Abram, Nahor, and Haran. He lived 70 years. That's 1948. Abram was the younger of those three, so not Abraham wasn't born in 1948. We trace all the years back. We get Abraham's birth was 2008. So Abe is born in 2008. Okay. Thus, we have 150. That's okay. So Shem lived 150 years after the birth of Abraham, and they lived in the same area. Not only that, but you really want to find out something interesting. You go back to 928, and it says Noah lived 350 years after the flood. So if you add 350 Noah's life, 350 years after the flood, that brings him to
2006.
So Abraham, Noah died 2 years before Abram was born. So Abram did not know Noah, but he knew Shem. Okay, now enough of that. Verse 27. Now these are the records of the generations of Terah. Terah is the father of Abram, Nahor, and Haran. And Haran became the father of Lot. And Haran died in the presence of his father Terah in the land of his birth in Ur of the Chaldees. This is the Valley of Shinar, Ur of the Chaldees, is where this is located. Abram and Nahor took wives for themselves. The name of Abram's wife was Sarai, and the name of Nahor's wife was Milcah, the daughter of Haran, the father of Milcah and Iscah.
Did women live that long too?
Yes, women lived quite a long time too. Now, verse 31 of chapter 11. And Terah took Abram his son, and Lot the son of Haran, his grandson, and Sarai his daughter-in-law, his son Abram's wife, and they went out together from Ur of the Chaldees in order to enter the land of Canaan. And they went as far as Haran and settled there. And the days of Terah were 205 years, and Terah died in Haran. Okay, now both of these locations, both Ur and Haran, are centers of the moon god cult. The moon god was called Sin, S-I-N, pronounced with a long E. Terah was a worshiper of the moon god. Now, I'll show you that in a moment. Terah is Abram's dad, and Terah is an idolater. In fact, Joshua 24:2, I might as well show it to you now. Joshua 24:2. Joshua said to all the people, "Thus says the Lord, the God of Israel from ancient times, from ancient times your father lived beyond the river, namely Terah, the father of Abraham and the father of Nahor, and they served other gods."
What verse is that?
That's 24:2 of Joshua. And that verse 3, it says, "And I took your father Abraham from beyond the river and led him through all the land of Canaan," and so forth, but more on that later. Okay, so back to Genesis.
You know, I've always wondered in the movie that I have Abraham how they knew this was going on because...
How they knew what was going on?
That everybody was in idolatry around them.
Oh.
Because he was living in this place and he goes into a store and they're like, hey, Abraham, you want to buy one of these idols?
Or yeah.
He's like, no. He's like, I really don't want to buy one. It's his brother. And he's like, what? Why don't you like all these idols? You know, it's like... Something like that, and I always thought they were just making that stuff
up.
Oh, okay. But there's actually a biblical
reason for it. Yeah, they probably did pretty good research for that movie.
Yeah, it seems pretty good.
Okay, so back to Genesis. Now what the end of chapter 11 has done is kind of given a summary up to the death of Terah. End of verse 32. Days of Terah were 205 years, and Terah died in Haran. Now, Abraham is 75 years old at that point when Terah dies. Abe is 75. This is 2083 AH.
This is verse 32?
That's 32, yes.
And what's the year?
2083. Now, what this summary does not do is tell us the reason for Terah taking Abram. Okay? It says Terah took Abram, they left Ur. Why? And then they settled in Haran. Well, now we're going to get some details of that. Chapter 12. Now the Lord said to Abram, go forth from your country, from your relatives, and from your father's house to the land which I will show you, and I will make you a great nation, and I will bless you and make your name great, and so you shall be a blessing, and I will bless those who bless you, and the one who curses you I will curse, and in you all the families of the earth shall be blessed. So there's the messianic lineage passed on to Abraham. Now, when did God say this to Abram?
75 years old.
No.
Oh. Abraham was 75 years old when he departed from Haran.
When he departed from Haran. But this information in chapter 12 was given before that. Okay. I want you to hold your place here and go to Acts chapter 7. Acts chapter 7, verse 2. Okay. And he said, hear me, brethren and fathers, the God of glory appeared to our father Abraham when he was in Mesopotamia before he lived in Haran, and said to him, depart from your country and from your relatives and come into the land that I will show you. Then he departed from the land of the Chaldeans and settled in Haran. And from there, after his father died, God removed him into the country in which you are now living. Okay? Follow me? So this message in chapter 12 of Genesis came to Abram while he was in Ur of the Chaldees.
So Abram didn't do it right away.
You got it. Figure that one out quickly. God said, Abraham, leave your country, leave your relatives, leave your father. What happened? The father picked up the clan and said, let's go. We don't know whether Abram talked to his dad and said, this is what God told me. But Nahor is an idolater. He is the head of the family, and he wants control and maintains control. And Abram is a wuss. Abram will not follow God's instructions. He disobeys. He stays under his father's authority. He follows his father to Haran, settles there, where the moon god cult is just as functional as it was in Ur of the Chaldees. And Abram remains under his father's authority. However, Abram is not an idolater. Abram is not following the idolatry of his father. He probably had already accepted the messianic promise that had been taught to him by Shem and others. Because God is not going to appear in the manner that he appears to an unbeliever. That's the reasoning. Okay, so he's in Haran for a while. And Terah died there. When Terah dies, Abe is 75 years old. So now God probably tells him again, Abram, leave. Verse 4 of chapter 12. So Abram went forth as the Lord had spoken to him, finally, right? Finally. And Lot with him. And now Abraham was 75 years old when he departed from Haran. But what did it take for Abram to obey God? The death of his dad, yeah. Because he was not going to go against his father. Now, that's respectable in a certain sense. But see, when your father is an idolater, you got to separate. Especially when God tells you, get out of your father's house. He didn't just say move, did he? He said leave your relatives behind and leave your father's house behind. That means he should have left Lot behind too. And Lot only became a pain in his side for as long as he was with him. So this still is partial obedience. He should not have taken Lot with him. Should have been himself, his wife, any servants they may have had, and left the whole clan behind. The whole clan were a bunch of idolaters. Even Lot, whom Abraham had a special attraction to Lot, loved Lot, his nephew, very greatly. But that's no excuse for disobeying God. Verse 4 is 2083. Same date that you have at 1132, when Abram was 75 years old. It happens to be 427 years after the flood. It's also 430 years until the Mosaic Law. Okay, verse 5. Abram took Sarah his wife, Lot his nephew, and all their possessions which they had accumulated, and the persons which they had acquired in Haran, and they set out for the land of Canaan. Thus they came to the land of Canaan. And Abram passed through the land as far as the site of Shechem, to the oak of Moreh. Now the Canaanite was then in the land. And the Lord appeared to Abram and said, to your descendants I will give this land. So he built an altar there to the Lord, which had appeared to him. And very possibly performed an animal sacrifice, although it's not mentioned. Then he proceeded from there to the mountain on the east of Bethel, pitched his tent with Bethel on the west and Ai on the east, and there he built an altar to the Lord and called upon the name of the Lord. And so from there you just have a kind of a history of Abraham's travels and some of his problems and difficulties. And he's still a growing believer. He has a lot to learn. He makes a lot of mistakes. He gets sidetracked with a few issues. But that is basically who Abraham is. Now, he's still called Abram. He's not Abraham yet because he doesn't become Abraham until a little bit later when God changes his name. But Abraham has, or Abram has been obedient here. I guess what I should go back and focus on is back to chapter 12, verses 1 through 3. Notice how it's set apart from the rest of it in poetic format. Does your Bible do that, Bob?
The 1, 2, and 3 are different.
Yeah, that's a poetic format, okay? The rest is prose format. So that's because this is a specific prophecy from God. Notice verse 2, I will make you a great nation. That means God's going to create of Abraham a special group of people. He's going to create from Abraham a new race. He's going to produce a new race. Okay? He's going to do this by genetic manipulation. From Abraham, Abram has a son named Isaac. God says, Isaac, I'm going to give you all the promises of Abraham. Isaac has two sons, Jacob and Esau. God says to Jacob, Jacob, I'm going to give you all the promises of Abraham. Esau, go away. So he's narrowing down the genetic structure there. From Jacob, that's the last of it. Then from Jacob, all of Jacob's children are now of this new race, and Jacob's name is changed to Israel, which means prince of God, or prince with God. And therefore, all of Jacob's children are now called Israelites. Okay? And they are not only a new nation. They're technically not a nation, but they are a new race. And so who is considered an Israelite physically? Anyone who has the genes of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. Okay, that person is an Israelite. The term Jew came later, much, much later. And then it became the standard term to refer to a descendant of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. That's the term we use today. We don't use the term Israelite. We use the term Jew.
It's from Jerusalem.
No.
It's not?
No.
Oh, I thought it was.
It's from Judah.
Oh, from Judah. Is that right?
Yeah. And it has to do with the Babylonian captivity. Mm. So that's not, it didn't come into play until during the Babylon, until actually the end of, close to the end of the Babylonian captivity. Because Judah, when the nation was separated, southern and northern kingdom, the southern kingdom was called Kingdom of Judah. So everyone who was of Judah was shortened and he became a Jew. So God created a new race, started to create a new race here. Notice it says, verse 2, still I will bless you and make your name great, and you shall be a blessing. So this is personal and historical promises to Abraham. Personal and historical. Abraham is going to receive personal blessing, he's going to have a great name, and he's going to be a blessing to others. Verse 3, first part, is the protection clause. The protection clause is, I will bless those who bless you, and the one who curses you, I will curse you. So you don't want to mess with Abraham. This protection clause has been in effect in general all throughout history. It does not mean that no harm can come to a Jew. It just simply means that you will be judged if you bring harm to a Jew. And this has been demonstrated all throughout history. When the Jews have been persecuted severely, the ones who were perpetrators ended up being judged. Probably, the most recent example of that is Nazi Germany. Nazi Germany persecuted the Jews. What happened to Nazi Germany? Wiped out.
What about the Palestinians? It's happening now.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, they.
You said the most recent was.
Because what's going on right now is not finished yet. Palestinians are thriving. And actually, it's The judgment on the Palestinians is going to be part of the eschatological, the end times, the prophecy part of it. Okay, because there needs to be a treaty between the Palestinians and Israel. And that's going to happen. It's in the works. It's been in the works for years. And they're getting closer and closer to it. And Israel's given up land for peace and given up that section and this section and so forth and moving their people out and letting the Palestinians have control of it. And eventually a covenant is going to be established that will bring religious peace to the area and political peace and military peace.
And then that starts the 7 years.
And that starts the 77 years, yeah.
I'm with you.
Okay. Now, back to Genesis 12, verse 3. The third line, and in you all the families of the earth shall be blessed. This is a spiritual promise. In you all the families of the earth, everybody, will receive blessing. And Paul tells us in Galatians 3:8 that this is the gospel. That this blessing is talking about a spiritual blessing. He proclaimed the gospel to Abraham when he said, in you shall all the nations of the earth be blessed. Okay. So God has promised him a land. God has promised, verse 12:7. The Lord appeared to Abram and said, to your descendants I will give this land. Now we have other places in Scripture that describe the detail what land God is talking about. But basically he's talking about, you don't have a map. It'd be easier just to show you instead of drawing it.
Good.
Well, then find one. Okay, well, I'm going to just turn the tape off now anyway. Well, I don't know. I'm almost done. I'll just get up and... Okay. You know the land grant, don't you, Daryl?
It goes from the Nile to
right,
the Euphrates.
The Nile River.
And then to the Euphrates.
Yep. All the way up to the Euphrates, which is up further here. See any other maps?
But then how do you see how far it goes to the southeast?
It goes to the end of the desert area.
You mean all the way to like the whole Persian, the whole Arabia?
Right.
All of this?
Yeah, all the way to the Persian Gulf. See, there's a Gulf here. So all of that is.
But I mean, this is all Arabia. If you look on the maps
right.
In the back.
So it's going to be. It's going to cover, encompass all Arabia.
Oh, okay.
No, that's not the right one either.
That's all there is.
So. Okay. Now, basically, from here up north, further north. Here we go. From here. Okay, from here, all the way up to the Euphrates River. There's Haran. Where's there? Oh, okay. Yeah, all the way up to here. And then all the way over this way.
And then you said it keeps going down that way.
Yeah. It goes down. Covers that whole area. Basically from sea to sea.
And that involved right now, that's a lot of countries.
Oh, yeah. Sure.
So what's the significance of all that?
That is the land promised to the Jews.
Okay.
And they will have it in Messiah's kingdom. When Messiah sets up his kingdom, all that land will be given back to Israel.
But even in the time of Solomon, they didn't have all of it.
No, they didn't. They never really fully possessed all of it.
Well, that seems like a long way off.
Well, no, because it's Armageddon is going to equalize everything. All the unbelieving armies will just be wiped out. I guess we can stop this.